that with it thou mayst blow thy enemies to tiny bits in thy mercy.
It's all here. Fast kicking, low scoring, and ties. You bet.
Here's Higuain. Oh, it's gone in! The first hat trick in 12 years! Ola Kamara has it!
Columbus Crew FC looking like the next Candy Crush saga. Who doesn't love Candy Crush? I do.
Yes! Yes! Oh God, yes!
Welcome to the Massive Report podcast, brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton. And available at any craft beverage retailer of any repute near you. And the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street. 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. Is March 7th, episode 222. Deuces Wild in honor of Clint Dempsey's goal this weekend. Just kidding, we hate him. My name is Bart Logan. I'm joined by Patrick Murphy this week. Smurf, what's going on?
Oh, not a lot.
Good to hear. Chris Landis. Chris, mad about anything?
Not yet.
I'm sure you will be. And don't worry, Alex Stanek. I will come to you. Alex, how goes it?
Not too bad. Not too bad.
Excellent. Then we've got Sam Fahmy holding it all down, producing. Sam, how goes it this week?
Could be better, but it's all right.
I think that is what everyone said as they walked out of Crew Stadium last weekend. It is week one. Week one, rather, is in the books, and we'll be recapping all that opening day action at MAPFRE Stadium and around the MLS. We'll look at some of the individual performances for Crew SC. Four players made their Crew and MLS debuts, I believe. We'll get the exclusive scoop on today's Crew SC Reserves match against the NCAA powerhouse Akron Zips, and a smattering of other club news, and then we will also preview Saturday's matchup with Houston. But first, we'll head back to this past Saturday. Crew's miss after 4 months of relative silence at MAPFRE Stadium. The team finally comes back after all the off-season additions, the tournament win in Carolina. And we could just replay an episode of last year's Massive Report during that tie swing, because it was just more of the same that we saw from last year. Patrick Murphy, you were there. You covered it, I believe, for Massive Report. Get us kicked off with the recap from MAPFRE Stadium.
Yeah, it was a bright start, to say the least. The team came out and I think looked about as dominant as we've seen them in a while. Really controlling the play against Chicago, getting an early goal, creating chances. And then we get to the second half, and Chicago makes a few adjustments, and I'm sure Chris will touch on it here because he wrote about it, but the team didn't really respond very well. They just kind of looked flat, I think, in the second half. The energy wasn't there that they had in the first half, weren't moving the ball as quickly, and because of that, Chicago was able to press a little bit more, and they didn't create a ton of chances, but they created enough. It only takes one to score and level the match, and that's how it ended up. We, as you mentioned, we saw some new guys, Jonathan Mensah, Mohamed Abu, Leah, and Zach Steffen, and Arthur all came on in the game. So nice to see those guys. I didn't think any of the new guys looked completely out of place. Arthur was predictably not ready for game action, I don't think. He'd been playing with the team for a little over a week, but you get him out there and let him see what he can do, so you can't blame that, I guess. But a 1-1 draw is, I think, disappointing after what we saw in the preseason, especially against a team like Chicago, who's not only a rival but has struggled recently. But it's one game. Now they have something to kind of look at and build off of, I guess, for the rest of the season.
Chris, you also covered the game. What'd you take away?
Yeah, so I want to preface all these comments with no football team, no soccer team on the planet you never want to read too much into the first match of the year. Win, lose, draw, worst performance ever, best performance ever. It's the first match of the year. Especially with a team that has so many new pieces in place, it's going to take time. As Murph alluded to, I have an article up on Master Report. That was the sixth thought box for this, so some of this is going to be a rehash. If you haven't read it, go read it. But basically, it was the most cliche of all cliche games. It was a game of two halves. You know, it. We came out, looked really good. Bridgeview sat back, did not pressure us, and it was kind of a recipe for success for us because they let us do what we wanted to do. The Crew SC moved the ball around well. They kept possession. They did everything they needed to do. They got the goal, Ethan Finley scoring a header, which was not high on the list of things we thought would happen, but it happened. So it looked like a good performance in the first 45 minutes. Harrison Awful ran rampant down the right-hand side. He was the best player on the pitch by a mile in that first half. Everything was running through him. It was just a spectacular performance from him for the first 45 minutes. The new boys, you know, the new combinations looked good. The center midfield partnership of Abu and Trapp looked like they'd been playing together for 5 years. It looked great. Jonathan Mensah had a few rocky turnovers, but him and Nace at least seemed to be on the same page. You know, there were a couple of times where the offside flag kind of spared their blushes a little. But, you know, this is all stuff that, you know, you would think would be worked out over the course of a long season. The second half, however, Greg Berhalter got outcoached. I'm just going to put it as bluntly as I can. He got outcoached. Bridgeview made some adjustments. They went wide. They started playing much wider instead of, you know, so compact. And they started pressing high up the pitch. And Crew SC had no answer. And I think that's really the main storyline and takeaway here. Crew SC didn't play terribly. They didn't play great. A draw was probably a fair result. You had some individual performances that looked pretty good. Justin Merrim had a good game. He wasn't quite on the same wavelength as Raitala, but, you know, they'll have time to work that out. Ethan Finley played pretty well, but on the other end of that, Federico Higuain, rough outing. Jonathan Mensah looked good at times, had some really bad turnovers at other times. He could have done much better on the goal that we conceded. So, you know, nothing to panic about. There were some positives to take away. The new partnerships looked solid. And, you know, I think that as this team has more time together, they're going to gel better. But there were also some concerns. And, you know, as Murph alluded to, Artur came out and made almost a negative impact. He did not look ready for prime time, needs much more time with his teammates. It's too soon to judge him on that because, like Murph said, he hasn't been with the team very long. But for all the hype, it was definitely a disappointing debut. So after one game, you can't gauge too much, but definitely some positives to take away, but probably more stuff to work on than positives to take away.
I thought it was a pretty interesting game. Like Chris said, I mean, it was a kind of a tale of two halves. But I thought the first half was encouraging. And even in the second half, I thought that the defensive performance was much better than it was last season. I thought we showed a little bit more rigidity at the back. You had players who seemed to understand where the other one was more than we saw even at the midpoint of last season. So that was encouraging. But it's one game. It's always hard to judge teams early on in a season, positive or negative. So I think it's too soon to say whether we've kind of fixed our problems, whether we have the same problems we had last year. But I walked away slightly encouraged. I thought a lot of our new players were kind of impressive. I actually thought Artur, for the period of time that he was on, he had a good showing. He had 91% pass completion rate during the time that he was on the pitch, which was, I believe, the highest out of the entire team. Although one of the center backs might have edged him out slightly, but I think he had one incomplete pass the entire game, something like that. He was only on for 15, 20 minutes, but I actually thought he did all right, especially when you consider the cold and everything like that. Federico Higuain did not have a good game. And I thought Justin Merrim was kind of in and out of the game as well. I thought there were a lot of times when he should have passed the ball when he held on to it, and there were some times when he passed the, or when he held on to the ball that he should have passed it, vice versa. Anyway, I thought that overall it was an encouraging performance, but there's still not that finished product. But the backline stuff was encouraging. I thought Artur was a little bit encouraging as well.
Yeah, and I guess I didn't get that from Artur, but I will give the man a break. He was saying he was excited about snow earlier in the week. This guy's a 20-year-old kid, new team, new league. I can't imagine he's ever played in anything below 70 degrees. I assume that ball probably doesn't pop quite off your foot the way it does at 32 as it would in 70 or 80 when you get later in the season. So as he gets reacclimated, might be a bit more encouraging. John Mensah, another guy who I thought in that first half he looked dominant, but in that second half, especially getting a chance to replay and watch that the replay of the goal, the move that he gets beat on, a little bit disappointing, but on the whole, I think a pretty good performance for him on the first go-around. Looking around the rest of the league, he had some surprise performances, are there any other takeaways, fellas, first from the game, any other individual performances from players that stuck out to you?
Well, I just wanted to, while we were touching on Artur, point out he doesn't speak English much at all. Mm-hmm. And while you don't need to speak English necessarily to play soccer. I mean, he understands soccer. He's been playing all his life. Just simple communications on the field, like, man on, turn, those type of things. He's still learning those words. It's got to be, I've never played with a team that speaks the entire separate language from me, but, none of that can be easy. So, I was actually surprised in one aspect that they brought him in as they did, because, maybe if you're winning the game, a guy that can kind of come in and help you out. But, when you're probably looking for a goal, I don't know. It seems surprising to me. I mean, Greg was very high on him, so maybe it shouldn't have been as surprising because he wanted to get him out there. But, I was a little surprised at that. And then I did like, for touching on individual performances, Ethan Finley. I thought, besides the goal, I thought he was active. We talked about him, I believe, last week, about him not doing much in the preseason, but he looked much more like himself, looked comfortable playing off of Harrison Offal and getting him behind. The second half, like most of the offense, he didn't do a ton, but they struggled to do much of anything. So I thought that was another bright performance individually.
On the topic of goalkeepers, Zach Steffens did get the start, as we all kind of predicted. Decision-making at times, little iffy, which is something you'd probably expect from a young player in his first MLS start. definitely concerned, though. There was one, I believe, in the second half where he just went on a total walkabout, and it looked real, real shaky. So definitely something to keep an eye on. He didn't look bad in general. Besides that one walkabout, I can't think of any real standout plays, but there were some times on crosses where, his decision-making was not the best, slow, off the mark, kind of deciding whether to come or stay. So definitely something to keep an eye on. It might have been first match nerves, but you have a young, talented goalie learning under a real MLS veteran, Pat Onstad, so I think that's something that people shouldn't panic about, but it does need to be said. He didn't exactly look like a superstar out there in his debut.
I actually thought he looked okay.
Of course you did.
I know we're going to disagree on this one, but I thought the only criticism that I might have had for him was he wasn't vocal at all with the back line, which is something that you saw a lot from Steve Clark. Now, if this is just a personality thing and that the team will kind of adjust to it, that's fine. But I'm kind of used to seeing that from Clark, and I miss it a little bit. When a defender lets a guy through and he has to make a save, you would always see Clark kind of bark at the guy who let the ball through. Stefan would just kind of like look at him and kind of move on. I thought he played well. And the other thing that kind of impressed me, which is not something he has any control over, but he is a big, big dude. He towered over everybody for the most part, including Mensah, who's a big guy himself. And so that's an attribute that's going to help him a lot. I mean, he is built like a goalkeeper. And, yeah, if our coaching staff can kind of train him into the top-level MLS keeper, I think we've got somebody who could potentially be here for the long term. I want to echo what Patrick said as well about Ethan Finley. I thought he had a fantastic game. He kind of looked like his old self of 2 years ago rather than the player that we saw last season. And if he can keep that up, I think he's going to be somebody who can really contribute in the offense. And I think we're going to need it. The last thing I wanted to touch on was the striker situation. Ola Kamara did play. We were not sure if he would or not. He did play. He wore a headband because he's still, I think, going through concussion protocol or something. I was a little bit surprised that he played. But
yeah, they actually tweeted out that Adam John was starting and then tweeted out an entirely new lineup that he was starting. And I was told that it was just a mistake, but I
wonder.
I'm skeptical. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if Ola just wanted to play and they played through whatever, which is not ideal perhaps, but I mean,
I will say with that, I do think, I mean, he was pretty much in full practice by the end of last week. So I assume concussion wise, he's cleared to go. He was leaving the field the same time as his teammates and whatnot. So I wouldn't worry about them handling that, especially with what they've had to go through with Will Trapp. But yeah, I do question maybe his fitness and whatnot if he wasn't, you know, taking part in the last whole week of preseason.
Yeah, I mean, the concern I have is if Ola Kamara is not fit or he's not sharp, if he's not playing well, I saw very little from Adam John that was encouraging. He did not look to me like a second-string MLS caliber striker. He looked like kind of a third, fourth string kind of guy, like your Aaron Schoenfeld, your Connor Casey type of depth player. I need to see more from him if he's going to be the guy who's going to be the backup to Ola Kamara. I mean, when you think about it, Ola Kamara was the guy who was the backup to Kai Kamara. I mean, and to go from having a depth player like Ola Kamara to having that depth player now be your starter and having Adam John be the replacement, it's not enough for me. I want to either see more from him or I want to see us shopping around to get another striker on our roster, assuming we have the cap space for it.
I could really see John barely making it to the summer window. If he doesn't, I think he's a really good complement to Ola Kamara, but I'm incredibly surprised to see when he was playing on Saturday, he would get the ball in the midfield and he'd come up and he'd like kind of slide to the wing and then all of a sudden realize that people are going to be sending the ball to him. So he like lays it off to Offal and then runs towards the middle of the box. It's like he forgets what kind of player he's supposed to be. So that kind of surprised me a bit. I would really, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Nico Hansen kind of, I don't want to say bump him off, but if Nico Hansen comes in and scores and shows some consistency or at least shows some interplay with the wingers to where like maybe Miriam shuffles up top or Finley shuffles up top while Nico comes from the side or all three of them interchange, which they kind of did on Saturday a little bit. I have not yet to see anything that inspires me out of Adam John. I think he's a really good compliment, just kind of like somebody said, Aaron Schoenfeld or anybody of that size. But I don't see him being Stevie, you know, or anything like that.
Yeah, it was certainly one of those Adam John and performance to reminiscent, I think, maybe of Adam Bedell in that it was very forgetful. And there's certainly, I've been saying it since the first couple weeks, I'm really worried about the depth at the forward position for these guys. And maybe Nico Hansen is a guy who can go into that role as the number two or the number two choice and super sub and kind of overtake him. But I think that's asking a lot out of a rookie, albeit one that is drafted a little bit earlier than we're used to seeing them drafted for the Crew. Looking over and getting a roundup of the results from around MLS and Boy, it looks, I think the highest score after you got past that Portland massacre was 2-1. So a lot of close games around MLS in the opening season. Chris, I know you had a chance to watch a couple of the action, a couple of the games. What are some of your takeaways from the competition so far?
You've actually got me confused with Alex. I didn't get to watch anything this weekend.
I apologize. Read the wrong one. Alex.
Yeah, I watched two of the games. I watched Atlanta in their debut match against New York Red Bull, and I also watched the Orlando game against New York City FC.
So you're a national televised guy.
I'm a national televised guy. Yeah, I haven't pulled the trigger on MLS Live this season. Like, I'm on the fence about it, but I might.
You know you can buy it monthly, right?
But who does that, Murph? Come on, man. You either go all in or you don't, and I don't know. I haven't decided. But I watched the two games. The Atlanta game was amazing. It was, everything about it was great. Atlanta had an incredible crowd. I think they had 55,000 people for their game. It was insane. They scored first. Crowd went wild. And then you started to see signs that, okay, yes, this is an expansion team, even though they've spent all this money on a young DP. And they have Michael Parkhurst at the back. They had veteran presence at the back. Parkhurst did not have a great game, by the way, but they ended up losing 2-1, and so the crowd kind of got a little bit antsy. It was not a great performance from Atlanta. They also kind of had a situation where they played really well in the first half and poorly in the second half, actually. But that was not great. The Orlando game was interesting. Kaká went down with an injury early on in that game, 10 minutes in. It's a hamstring injury, I believe. He's out for, I think they said, 6 weeks. Ooh. He will miss the Crew game on April 1st. So that's something to keep in mind. And they looked okay. I don't think that they're still a very good team. They're not quite there. Kyle Larin is an amazing player. He's kind of their superstar other than Kaká. He's somebody I think they could lose to a European club in the near future. New York City FC didn't look that great either. I mean, neither team really impressed me in that game. I thought Pirlo had a couple good moments and Villa had a couple good moments, although he was offside quite a bit. And I don't know, none of the teams that I saw, Atlanta, New York City, Orlando, New York Red Bull, really impressed me a heck of a lot, except maybe Red Bull. I thought they looked pretty good. And yeah, I mean, there were some incidents after the Orlando game. You had a New York City FC fan. They also opened their new stadium. And a New York City FC fan was caught stealing a chair that they had ripped out of the new Orlando stadium. This is not the first time, by the way, that a New York City FC fan has been arrested for stealing a chair from another stadium.
Maybe they're a little self-conscious because they have to play at the, you know, at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, maybe they're trying to like build a new stadium piece by piece or something. But somebody got arrested stealing a Red Bull Arena chair last year. So I don't know. Maybe this is like a New York City thing. They also attacked a cop after the game apparently and choked him. Although I don't know. I haven't heard much about that beyond the initial kind of news report. So I can't give you any details on that, but apparently three supporters, I believe, were arrested after that game for fighting with a police officer. So great day for New York City, and they really kind of, you know, brought a lot of attention to Major League Soccer for not a great reason. So thanks, guys.
Which is, I think, a good way to kind of just qualify that team just across the board, bringing a lot of attention to Major League Soccer for not really good reasons.
That's a good point.
They're terrible.
I watched a couple games today. I do have MLS Live, so, well, I watched those games last night too, and I think Alex summed them up pretty well there. But I watched Houston today, which we'll get to a little bit more in when we preview them. But just that game in general, probably one of the better games of the weekend with the season starting up. I think basically my takeaway from this generally is that the first weekend of MLS is kind of a feeling out process. You know, teams do all different things in preseason. It's not like a lot of other sports where they play the same amount of games or the same type of opposition. You know, some teams are playing MLS teams, some teams are in CONCACAF Champions League, some teams don't play any MLS opponents. You know, some teams play a ton of games. So I think everybody comes in kind of with a mixed bag. You know, players arrive at different points. I mean, you know, you look just with Chris C and the Ghana guys not getting here until just, you know, partway into the Charleston trip. So I think there's going to be, and I think we've seen this in the past, a couple weeks of feeling out, and that's kind of what I saw. I also watched the D.C. Match with Sporting Kansas City, 0-0 draw, missed penalty kick in that game for D.C., and you know, they just, neither team looked like they really had it going yet, and you know, that's kind of been my impression. That was a little bit of what I thought in the Chicago-Columbus game too. So, you know, I think we'll get a better sense of who teams are and what they can offer, where they might fall as we get a few weeks into the season, because guys are still trying to figure each other out and kind of sort through things, I think. But you know, it's fun at least to have it back, and you know, their games on again. I did think that Portland looked impressive, but I also don't know how bad Minnesota is, so there's that.
I was going to say, the only game I got to watch outside of the Crew game was the Minnesota-Portland game. And when Minnesota scored, it looked like they were about to try to make a comeback. I mean, they still had probably about 10 or 15 minutes, and they were only down one. And then I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden Portland was scoring at will, and it was ridiculous. So I think Minnesota and Atlanta are both, no matter how much they've spent, and obviously Atlanta spent quite a bit of money, but no matter how much they've spent, they are still definitely expansion teams, and especially Minnesota very much showed like they are a USL team, very, very much.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, as disappointed as people were to see Mohamed Saeed leave Columbus, I thought he looked rather ordinary in that game. You know, maybe it's playing with new teammates, maybe it's playing a different system, but I believe he gave the ball away that led directly to a goal, and just didn't seem to click with the guys around him. I do think the expansion teams will be expansion teams. We've seen, you know, even New York City and Orlando spend a bunch of money and not make the playoffs. Doesn't mean it'll happen with Atlanta. You know, they didn't look nearly as bad as Minnesota did, but neither was super promising from the get-go.
Atlanta are going to be a force, man. They've got a great manager. They've brought in some really quality signings. I think Atlanta are a dark horse to make a giant impact this year in MLS, and they could very well be contending for trophies by the end of things.
Can I disagree with Chris yet again? Do I have time?
I guess.
Okay. The one thing that I find interesting about Atlanta, and I do think they have a great manager, but great managers outside of Major League Soccer, outside of kind of the American soccer system, have traditionally struggled. And so it's going to be very interesting to see if Tata Martino is the manager who can kind of break that trend and become kind of a great MLS manager without having been a college coach, or without being an MLS coach, or without being an MLS player, or kind of any connection to this system. It's a very tough system to learn, and although it's moving kind of closer towards a traditional system, there are still tons of arcane rules that even like we don't completely understand. So
that's
it'll
because
be interesting.
They're meant to be intentionally vague.
I think they are. But it'll
give
be interesting.
Don Garber plausible deniability.
Yes. It'll be interesting for me to see if he can be the coach that he was for, say, Argentina. I'm kind of pulling for him a little bit. I want Atlanta to be kind of an exciting team. I want us to beat them, but I want to have exciting teams in this league. So it'll be interesting to see how they develop over the course of the season.
Well, when it comes to beating them, we've already done that once. Whether it counts or not, you know, that's
it
up
counts.
To.
It counts.
We'll take it. And apparently, I mean, you talk about the teams showing kind of their expansion team colors, but I heard that during the game that the Atlanta fans were also pelting Sasha Kleischen with beers, and I mean, give the fans the credit. That's like vintage Nordic for that. So, but interesting results from around the league. this past week. And then Smurf, you mentioned you were at the reserves game where we got to see a couple guys that were very conspicuously not present for the crew this past weekend on opening day, Tony Chani among them. So a chance to take a look at him, a chance to watch 90 minutes of invigorating Adam John football. What was it like, 5-6? What was our score?
It was a thrilling 0-0 draw. Give credit to Akron. I think that they came really to play, and Akron is obviously a pretty good good college team. You'd still expect a professional reserve team to beat them, but you know, as I mentioned with MLS first teams, things are kind of disjointed and whatnot, and when you're just throwing together a reserve lineup, I don't think you can expect a ton. But it was interesting to see some of these guys in person. The Nico Hansons, the Lalas Abubakars, young guys that we hadn't seen before, play a little bit. I thought both looked really good. I think, you know, in small sample size so far, Greg Berhalter and his staff have done a good job with the high draft picks that they had. I really like Lawless defensively. He's seems to have good positioning, and when he's not in a good position, he's very athletic and can get to where he needs to be. Physical, but doesn't seem to foul a bunch. They played the three-man back line, and he played kind of on the right-hand side of that, with Crenali in the middle and Josh Williams on the left. And they looked pretty comfortable doing it. Crenali had a few times where he probably could have communicated a little better to the two of them, but for the most part, I thought they played well. Offensively, as you mentioned, Tony Chani played. He was in the middle with Arthur, who played most of the game, came out early in the first half. And actually, we got to see Abuchi Obinwa, which was nice. Didn't do much, but good to see him out there after dealing with a little bit of an injury. And, Chani looked like Chani. I mean, you know, didn't seem to have any negative effects from not making the 18 for opening day. He did what he normally does in the center of the park. Artur looked similar to what he did in the first team game on Saturday. I didn't think of anything specific. He didn't, lose the ball, as Alex mentioned. You know, his possession rate was high. There was one in particular giveaway where he just kind of stumbled and the defender happened to be right there to take it from him. But other than that, pretty good possession. Hector Jimenez looked comfortable in the middle of the field, kind of playing underneath the forward along with Nico Hansen. Had a really good free kick that probably should have been the opening goal. It was kind of late in the game, but a good save by their goalie. And Hansen looked good as well. A few shots. Certainly not afraid to dribble and take guys on 1v1. But I would ask you guys what you thought, but they don't let other people come to these. So I guess you'll just have to take my word that that's how it looked and that's how it happened.
I have a couple questions for you.
Sure.
First of all, was Lawless's hair as impressive in the game as it was in preseason?
Oh, yeah.
And how many Instagram followers does he have?
I would have to check on the Instagram followers, but he does have some great hair. It's rather wavy in the wind of fine Obetz, Ohio, which is where they play those games. But yes, his hair is very nice.
Fantastic.
Stay tuned to Mass Report for this hard-hitting soccer journalism, ladies and gentlemen.
It's important,
hard-hitting.
Man. It's important. My other thing is I thought we should talk about Chani, because he played in this game, but he didn't make the 18 in the first game. And I guess my thinking is, I mean, is he somebody that we trade to get a third striker?
Well, and he didn't make the 18 over a 20-year-old Brazilian who'd just been practicing with the team for less than a week and had just seen snow for the first time. I mean, that's saying something, I think.
Here's the problem with trying to trade Tony Chani. You've missed his window for when you can get real value for him. I don't think there are too many teams in MLS right now, with the exception of maybe a Minnesota United who, you know, as was just pointed out, are struggling a little, even in the early goings here, to kind of control the center of the park. I don't know if there's that big of a market for him. You know, he had one good season and then a lot of inconsistent performances across his MLS career. He's obviously a physical presence. He's obviously got some qualities, but MLS teams kind of know who he is at this point. They've seen enough of him. We've all seen enough of him that it's – I don't know if there's
some team,
really –
some team will take a chance on him. Some team like you said, like a Minnesota, or some team that needs an enforcer in the middle because theirs got injured. Somebody's going to take a chance on him. It's not going to be till, you know, the July-August window, but somebody will. I mean, you're not going to get as much value for him, but you'll get something for him.
I think he could go before May, before the window closes in May.
Well, I think there's a couple things to think about with Chani. I think that, as Chris mentioned, he has been inconsistent at points. I think that he adds something that none of the other central midfielders have in terms of his physical size, which I think is something you have to have. And there's also the depth part of it. You know, they have talked about loaning Abuchi Abinwa away, that he's not really ready. They've loaned Rodrigo Saravia away already. So, you know, are you going to go through a season with just three midfielders? Are you going to try and find a central midfielder back? You know, if Tony is willing to fight for his spot, then I think you could roll with this and kind of, you know, put pressure on other guys. And I actually asked Greg about this after the game, and I'll just read you his quote. And he said on about his performance, "I thought his mindset was good, and that's what we're looking for. It's a long season. I don't think by a person not being in the 18 yesterday, it says where they're going to end up or what the season's going to be for them. A lot of the guys playing today are going to play important roles for the team this year, so we've got to get them fixed. We've got to keep them sharp and make sure they're ready." And he went on in another question to talk about how, you know, they want to have depth, and that they're telling guys, you know, if you're not in 18, here's why, and, you know, if these things get better, you will be in the 18, or you will be in the starting lineup, or whatever the case may be. So, you know, I think Greg is trying to handle the situation as best as possible, and if Tony's willing to put in the work and battle for the spot, I still think he has a role to potentially play in this team in certain situations.
But let's be honest here. It's kind of an open secret at this point that Tony Chani does have a very high opinion of himself. You could even say he has an ego. The reputation has followed him throughout his career from New York to Toronto to here, and I think it's kind of one of those open secrets. So there was some chatter last year when he was dropped from the side that he was unhappy and that, you know, he might want to try to force a move. Let's be honest, that could be a legitimate possibility here. You talk about wanting to stay and fight for the team, but it remains to be seen whether or not Tony Chani has that sort of mindset, and I think it's a very real possibility that, like Alex said, this might be a situation where we see Tony being gone before the window. And I think that no matter what Greg Berhalter is saying, he may be saying all the right things, but rest assured, he's got a plan for life without Tony Chani, and I think it's more likely that we see Tony Chani leave than see Tony Chani stay, barring an injury to one of the guys who's jumped him, you know.
No offense, but are we upset about this? I mean, would fans be legitimately upset if Tony Chani left?
Yes, because fans get upset about legitimately anything in Columbus, Ohio.
They would be wrong
to be upset, I think. Although, I think he's a good player. I think he's a nice guy. But I do think that we have a lot of depth at that position and we have needs elsewhere. And so if the coaching staff feels like he is not the strongest center midfielder that we have right now, then they should look to trade him for a striker or even a number 10, like even a second number 10. But I don't know.
Well, when you say we have depth, I guess, like, that's my biggest question is, is there a lot of depth there? Because, you know, if it's just Arthur and Mohamed Abu and Will Trapp, and you're, you know, going to bring one of those guys off the bench, I think you're asking a lot from just three guys. I mean, I guess that's what they kind of rolled with last year, with Saravia being kind of the emergency option, but, you know, he's not even here now. You know, the fourth guy would be, you know, do you ask Nico Hansen?
Yeah, Nico Ness.
I guess that's what I meant. Yeah, I guess we could do that.
I mean, I think the concern for me is you have a guy who's on, isn't Chani on 100, 150, 180,000? I think he's on quite a significant wage right now. That's a lot of money to have for a guy who's probably only going to play a handful of games if you're, you know, the fourth guy on the depth chart. So I don't know. I mean, I think trading him would be an option. Or, I mean, you could look to move on Will Trapp in the summer and try to find him a home in Europe or something like that. Maybe that's another option. But I think we have too much kind of depth in this one role when we still have needs elsewhere. And, you know, this is one of these weird things about Major League Soccer where nobody really knows until the salaries all come out. And even then you don't really know how much cap room you actually have. If we can get another striker in without having to do that, then maybe all of this is just a waste of time and we can have our cake and eat it too. But I have to think that we might need another striker, and I think that needs to be a priority for this team.
Will Trapp to Europe is a pipe dream, just putting that out there. So if we're talking about windows that have closed, I think the Will Trapp to Europe window has slammed about as firmly shut as it's going to.
I disagree. I think that if you can get Rodrigo Saravia alone in second division somewhere in Europe or first division somewhere in Europe, you can definitely get Will Trapp. The only difference is that Saravia's got more "quote unquote" senior national team experience, but I think that if you can manage that with Saravia, I think you can manage that with Will Trapp for sure.
I think if Will Trapp was going to go, he would have went. What was it, last year, the year before, when there was the massive speculation? Moved to Greece.
Yeah,
I just get muted? What happened?
No, I accidentally hit your mute button.
I think we think of Will as like this player that should be much further along in his development than he is for a 24-year-old. You know, I think there's plenty of time for him to go over to Europe. I mean, look at, obviously you're comparing different positions here, but Brian McBride didn't go to Europe until he was close to 30 years old and then played over there for 5 or 6 years before coming back here, if I remember correctly. So, you know, I don't know if he'll ever go to Europe. I do think that there's still an opportunity for that. If and when the time comes, you know, we're not necessarily talking about the Premier League, but, you know, there's plenty of European options. But, you know, as a guy who just got married and is from Columbus and has family here and is very close to his family, has, I know, good friends on the team, you know, maybe that's not something he's considering right now. So I don't know if that'll impact the Chani decision at all, but I don't think it could. I don't think we should say it can never happen yet.
Alex, you were asking about Tony Chani's salary. It's 283.
Yeah, 283. I mean, that's a lot of money to have that far down the depth chart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we'll have to see what happens with everything. I think he deserves a shot. I think he's earned time on this roster to try to earn his spot back. But whether or not that actually happens, I don't know.
Certainly something to watch for. It's Tony Chani. If nothing, he brings a skill set with that size that no one else really has at that position, unless, again, you were to bump up a guy like Nico Ness. And it's hard to sacrifice that size in the middle of the park, but if he's not going to play onto the pitch, it doesn't really matter. Moving forward, as we're looking at the matchup this weekend with Houston Dynamo, in a Houston team that made a bit of a statement to open up the MLS 2017 campaign against the defending champ Seattle Sounders with a 2-1 win. I mean, I think a lot of credit probably should go to Columbus Crew SC for beating Seattle so soundly in that final preseason game and probably just kind of messed them up going into that Houston game. But credit deserves to go to the Houston team that looks like, you know, early on in the season, this is a really intriguing matchup.
Yeah, I think so for sure. I think Houston could do a lot of things that Columbus doesn't want to see at this point, still trying to figure out their stuff defensively and things like that. I think what they did best in that game was this high press with their three front men. They really caused Seattle issues trying to play out of the back, and we know how Columbus likes to do that. If you know, I had to pick someone I would say not to play right now, it would probably be them and the Red Bulls, because I think, you know, trying to just play Greg's style with some guys that haven't been in it for a while and stuff is problematic against a team like that, especially going on the road. They're a team that I don't know how well they'll do because I don't think it's necessarily sustainable, especially playing your games in Houston through the summer because it's a lot of work. But against Seattle, they got up 2-0 in the first half. In the second half, they were able to just kind of counter. Seattle had some chances. Obviously, they scored the goal through Dempsey, but weren't able to get the second one. And to be fair, Houston had chances to make it three. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting matchup because they will, at least for the first, you know, however long they can do it, first half or so, make it difficult for Columbus to play out of the back. And we'll have to see how comfortable these guys are moving off the ball and stuff, because against Chicago, when they did that, it caused issues in the second half.
Yeah, I think that, pardon me, I think that the press is really going to be just the story of the game, and because Crew SC, they looked so uncomfortable when Bridgeview pressed the ball high in that second half, and it changed the course of the game. It was the storyline of the game, and, you know, Jonathan Mensah had entirely too many turnovers in that second half for somebody who's being paid DP money. And it's a legitimate worry. It's a worry for me, because Houston obviously had such great success with it. So if there is a plan B that Berhalter has in his back pocket, you know, it's only the second game of the season, but you might see some iteration of a plan B put out here, because that press is a real legitimate wrench gumming up the works for this Crew SC team looking to get a first win.
And I will say that Greg is aware of it, because after the scrimmage, as we were walking off of the field, he was like, "Do you guys watch the Houston game?" I was like, "Yeah, I watched some of it." And he was like, "How about those three front guys pressing all the time?" You know, he's like, "That's going to be interesting." And they just walked away. But, you know, he certainly was already on top of it, you know, as of Sunday.
On top, I guess that's one way to put it. But it'll definitely be interesting. I mean, it's you know, maybe being, it almost sounds like one of those, like if you're playing FIFA in the manager mode, when it's, "Oh, what are you going to do? Compliment the other manager?" Like he's trying to play a mind game with him. But it is an intriguing matchup that a Houston team that last year was kind of down in down among the league, and now you see them up here, that pressing game against this team. Yeah, you could see that this game could go a couple ways, and some of them don't look very good for this Columbus Crew SC team.
Yeah, the one thing I wanted to touch on with them, speaking of that forward line, is Kubo Torres, who MLS fans probably remember from his days with Chivas USA, a guy who can score goals for sure, but has had some issues, you know, staying in teams and things like that. But Wilmer Cabrera, who was his head coach for his best year with Chivas USA, is now the Dynamo coach, and he looked pretty good in that first game, at least in the first half. Scored a goal on a free kick that was a good shot, but probably should have been saved by Stefan Fry. He kind of started to go early, and it kind of came to where he was standing, I guess. But, you know, a forward who can really be a force in this league, I think, and could be a golden boot type of guy if he can, you know, stay healthy, stay in the squad, and, you know, get pretty comfortable with his teammates.
Really excited by the fact that we have a couple of Chivas USA references this week. That makes me real happy.
I'll try and bring them as often as possible if you like.
Does anybody see how, like, sometimes the counterattack, they would start, like, doing this really fast counter that they did in preseason, and then they'd get to, like, the opposing team's other half, and then they just kind of stop and pass the ball around?
Did you notice that often happened when Higuain got the ball?
I just saw it happen enough. I didn't necessarily see if it was just Higuain or somebody else in the middle, but I was kind of really surprised. I'm like, you worked on this all offseason, and it looked really good, and then now you're just dying when it comes to the middle of the field. What happened?
I think it was a combination of Higuain having just a real rough game, and yeah, also you had it happened a lot towards the end of the game, and I was on the side of the field where it was happening right in front of me. Raitala and Merrim were just not on the same page a number of times, and you could tell they were starting to get a little frustrated with each other, and that definitely undid two or three counterattacks that were just completely undone by that sort of miscommunication or not being on the same wavelength. And that's something that's just going to come in time. The mindset and the tendency was there. They weren't just playing for the draw. They were definitely both looking to counterattack. The whole team was looking to counterattack, so that's encouraging. It was just those two players were not quite on the same page at those points.
We also noticed in the FC Dallas game, keeping it in Texas, a certain Hernan Grana has returned to MLS. As we're looking, and of course,
Alex
now I'll take Harrison Offal over Hernan Grana, even if he spurned us and left us. I think Harrison upgrade, but interesting to see that face again in MLS after he's so homesick.
I love Hernan Grana still, and I'm glad he's not homesick anymore. Maybe the Texas weather's a little bit easier on his lifestyle, but I still don't. He's got kind of a complicated. That whole thing was way more complicated than just being homesick. So I hope he's got everything worked out and he can be back here now. But I'm still very curious as to what they offered him to get him back to the United States, because I don't know how that works. But yeah, I'm happy for him. Can't wait to see him in Columbus. I'll give him a high five when he's here.
I must be the only person who thought Grinnell was just wildly overrated. I was never all that impressed. He put so much strain on that back line, and he just had no positional awareness whatsoever. I never rated him.
How do you feel about Harrison Offal?
Better than Grinnell, but still has similar deficiencies. In the game Saturday, he seemed to be sticking to the right-hand side and not popping up in center-attacking midfield territory like Grenat was prone to do, so that was definitely one of the big knocks I had against Grenat. He just kind of roamed wherever he wanted. Awful definitely puts some strain on the defense, but he has a better understanding than Grenat does that I'm remembering, and I could be misremembering. I drink a lot of beer now. I definitely rate Awful higher than I rated Grenat ever.
I think it might have more to do with the system than with the players themselves. I think
they're playing the same system.
Yeah, no, but yeah. I think that's why they're pushing so far forward, is because that's what Berhalter wants out of his wingbacks.
I understand that, but there's still a difference between pushing high up the right hand side like Awful does, and pushing high up the right hand side and then jamming up Higuain like Grenat did on multiple occasions over multiple games. There's a large positional difference, even operating within the same system with the same circumstances.
I will say that Harrison has done that from time to time. Maybe not as much as Hernan, but. And I think that is something that they've done, at least with Harrison, to, you know, kind of switch things up with Ethan, since, you know, he's kind of been pushed in. You know, they still want an attacking presence there, but if he can kind of pinch in where Ethan is, sometimes it just kind of flusters the defense a little bit. Different guy in a different place. I mean, even that goal that Harrison scored, while he wasn't tucked all the way in, he did come in field more so than he usually does. This was last year against Chicago, but I don't think many Crew SC fans are disappointed with Harrison, so I think, you know, they can let bygones be bygones with Hernan Grana.
I think they will. And of course, as Chris mentioned, he's been drinking, and what he's been drinking, we are sure, is Land Grant Brewing Company. Land Grant Brewing Company is at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton, or when he decides to go out to drink, he usually goes to the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street, 21 and up Barcade. Please patronize our sponsors.
That is actually legitimately true. Tonight's beer of choice was a Misconduct Imperial Rye IPA from the Land Grant Brewing Company. That is a legitimate 100% accurate point.
See, we couldn't even organize that ahead of time if we wanted to. We did.
We probably could have.
We could have. We didn't, but we could
have.
We didn't,
but we will. We will. No, probably not. As we're getting ready to kind of wrap up, fellas, let's rattle in some picks for the game this weekend against Houston. Who wants to lead us off?
It's going to be 2-1 Houston. I don't like Kruse's chances in this one.
I also think it'll be 2-1 Houston. I was watching the game today, and I think that unless they can, you know, fix some of the things that have caused them problems in the past, caused them problems this past weekend, I think that Houston, especially early in the season, is a bad matchup for this team. And, you know, maybe they could get out of there with another draw, but I think it is likely a 2-1 Houston win.
I'm going to go with 1-1. I think it's going to be a draw.
That's a familiar score.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with 1-1, too. It's, I don't know, beginning of the season, I expect the defense to play better and maybe push more on that counterattack as opposed to just trying to force their game. I think it's funny, every time Chris says that Berhalter got out-coached, you'd get out-coached when you're trying to change things and they don't work and the other coach beats you to it. But when you're not changing anything, the chances of you being out-coached is almost 90%. So...
Yeah, but my point's still correct. He didn't adjust to the adjustments that the other coach made.
Well,
that is,
and we know that, and we know that he won't do that. He wants to force his way, and that doesn't. I never, at least me personally, I never think that that is a way to play, to win games. But that's just.
But I'm
me.
Still right, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I'm concerned
I just,
about
I just think it's funny because it's he's basically, you know. Anyway,
does this mean that Greg? Does this mean that Greg's right because he's a professional coach and we're on a podcast?
Well, doesn't every coach think that though?
Yeah.
And doesn't every fan think the opposite?
Well, fans.
Yes.
No, I know I'm an idiot. I know I'm an idiot. I don't think I'm better than Greg. You're better than me, Greg.
But you want Falcao.
Well, Greg wants Falcao too, I'm sure. If we talk
I don't
to him
think
about
there
it.
Are many coaches on earth.
Can you get him on the record
Falcao?
On that? Get him on the record on that, Patrick.
I will ask him about Falcao.
Can we go one podcast without talking about Ramadel Falcao, please?
It's Radamel, first of all. Radamel Falcao Garcia.
Ramrod.
Be correct here. And I didn't bring it up. Murph did. So.
Yeah, I know, and I'm really mad at Murph for this.
That's okay.
We almost made it, Pat.
Bart, what's your prediction?
Almost up. I will, to change it up, I'm going to go with 3-1, Kurosi get him. This was a team that had like 30% possession against Seattle Sounders. Greg Berhalter's beautiful attacking possession football just smothers them. And Kurosi get the 3-1 win. A brace from Justin Miram, the Iraqi Ronaldo, and Mohamed Abu gets his first goal for the team.
Bold prediction, Cotton.
All right, now we'll start keeping score, and you'll find me very low in the standings for the Mass Report podcast picks by the time we get a couple weeks into the season, I'm sure.
We tried to do that last year, and I don't think we ever actually ended up keeping track.
Yeah.
So to be fair, like, we were hitting well below the 50% rate at
well,
predicting
yeah.
stuff last year. It was bad. You didn't want to see that spreadsheet, trust me.
I like that there was an actual spreadsheet.
Oh yeah, I tried to keep up with it between like podcast and writers, and it was just disastrous. We were getting smoked.
My question is, how often did my prediction change between what I wrote for the website and what I predicted on the pod? How often?
About 50%.
That was about 50-50.
Right. Yeah.
Too much drinking. Too much land grant.
I really
not
think...
enough. Not enough yeah. drinking.
There's you can't do enough drinking to forget that 2016 season. I thought we'd agree to just burn every reference of it and just forget about it. Didn't happen.
No,
moving
man,
on.
I wrote some good articles last year. I wrote some good articles last year. Go check them out, massreport.com. There's some good stuff.
Yeah, that's true. Check it out, massreport.com. Also, for those of you, since, you know, we're recording this at one point, and it's not really like a call-in show, so if you tweet us right now, it's going to be late, but we might be able to answer your question next week, so follow us at Massive Report. Tweet at us your questions for next week's podcast and use the hashtag MRPod. Gentlemen, any final thoughts to part ways with?
I'm glad to see Clint Dempsey back on a soccer field.
Oh, shut up.
Man.
Go home, Murph.
Sorry, guy's good at football.
Alex?
I think it's a little bit weird But I think we just, I think that
deep cuts.
I think that all Crew fans, when we see these 1-1 draws, we need to just say, "Where's the love?"
Okay, you did that one last week.
Did I? All right. Yeah. Sorry. They only have so many songs, guys. I can't.
They have like 4 CDs now, but I wouldn't tell you to listen.
You know what
you
guys need to do? Apparently, they own a brewery now. Apparently, they own a brewery. Apparently, they have a beer called Hops.
We should stop now.
Listen.
You should stop now.
That's a legitimate true fact.
You two would be lost without each other. But no, seriously, you guys just need, you know, give a little. I'm working on it. I'm going to try my best.
My fiance just pulled up the website. There is, in fact, a beer called Hops. It is mhops.com. That is a real legitimate true fact.
Okay.
Beer. It's not as good as Land Grant.
Nothing's as good as Land Grant.
Oh, no, certainly not Land Grant beer at 424 West Town Street. But you guys, someone has to find a way to get, just import one of those bottles, and you have to have Nico Hansen drink it, or just hold it up. Do it. It'll be wonderful.
Are going to Oklahoma anytime soon, we will contact us. We will make this happen.
I'm sure we've got listeners all over the globe.
Just like there were just millions and millions. I'm going to go down a bad rabbit hole that we don't want to alienate people with. So, anything else? Well, with that, we will we'll be back again next week. Same Massive Report time, same Massive Report place on MassiveReport.com. So, gentlemen, we'll see you then.
War on Alex.